Hey, I'm Elissa Nicole Trust, an actor and writer based in New York City.
I'm Lauren Schaffel, an actor and producer also living in New York City.
And we are Positive Creativity Podcast.
Positive Creativity is a podcast where we speak with artists from all disciplines about how they got their start, what's inspiring them, and how they stay positive in the entertainment industry. We speak with artists based in New York, LA, and beyond.
Our goal is to give creative artists a platform to share their experiences and talk about their work. We hope that our listeners will enjoy the insights, stories, and perspectives from a diverse group of artists from all sides of the industry. Thanks for listening. Up next is Shayna Feinberg, a filmmaker from New York City who specializes in micro-budget filmmaking. Her most recent film is playing the festival circuit. Shayna is also an author and writes a column for the New York Times. And for 7 years, she made a public access TV show called The Spew. We had so much fun talking to Shayna. She is super impressive. She's always working on many different projects and just loves to create and make things and ideate and get her ideas out into the world like children who she just wants to get out of the house. We had so much fun speaking with her and hearing about all of the various projects she's working on and the things that inspire her and the art that she has made out of everyday opportunities and occurrences. She is really, really impressive. Shayna has a book that she authored called Everybody, and she's working on another one, which is super exciting. So I can't wait for you to listen to everything she's up to. Enjoy this episode with Shayna Feinberg.
Welcome, Shayna.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. We're so excited to chat with you today.
Yes.
Me too.
Woohoo! So we always start with this kind of bigger question. What is currently inspiring you?
You know, I feel really inspired. I have like a sandwich of inspiration as a filmmaker, which I think is like my first identity. So I have this sandwich of inspiration of like being inspired by other women like myself, but like the filmmaker Joan Darling, who's in her 80s and I recently have become friends with over the last year, or like Agnes Varda, or Pamela Adlon from Better Things. Mm. Inspired, but also inspired by like watching stuff that feels so sexist. And that really inspires me. Like anytime I see a thing where I'm like, this is crazy sexist, I can't believe this exists, then I'm always like, oh my God, I'm so happy I'm making stuff. So it's just a sandwich of inspiration of like, does that make sense? So those things both inspire me.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Do you have an example? I know you said that you don't shit talk, but do you have an example of something sexist that has made you feel excited about the work you're doing?
Well, I mean, it's like, I don't have a good one that's like recent, but like, for example, the movie Diner, which I love. I love the movie Diner. It was from the 80s, Barry Levinson. Mm-hmm. And it's like all dudes except for like one woman who cries and is like, am I beautiful? And also there's like a part where Mickey Rourke like has a thing of popcorn over his penis in a movie theater, and like the girl he's on a date with is like eating the popcorn until she touches his penis.
Oh my God.
So that's kind of a recent one, because I saw it like as a kid, and then I've seen it like over the years, you know, obviously. But like that's inspiring because it's like a really good movie about friendship, and it's like beautifully shot and it's super funny, but then you're like, this is so freaking sexist. And there's, I don't know, that, you know, that's like an example, but I have it in little ways like that all the time, like just watching, I don't know, I just was at Aspen Film Festival, which was amazing, and a guy there was like, hey, if you ever need a DP, I'd love to work with you, and then I watched his reel, and he's very talented, but every single image that had a woman in it. The woman was like gyrating and had her boobs out or had her stomach bare. And I was like, oh, that's just crazy sexism. Like every single shot is like looking at women in this like object-y way that is not appealing to me. So I was like, I guess I have to pass on working with that person, even though they were very talented. But so that kind of thing, like I see it constantly as like a person who doesn't feel like I'm can be pigeonholed by like what it means to be a woman. And so, yeah, I just see it all the time. Like all the movies that I loved, like old school, you know, like you watch that now and you're like, holy cow, this is crazy sexist. And anyway, so yeah, so that stuff happens and it really inspires me to keep going and keep making female characters and gender non-binary characters who are not the same, like few characters that I feel like we see. And that has gotten so much better over the years. Like we've definitely got like a bigger lexicon of women and gender non-binary characters, but it still pales in comparison to the amount of men that you can see and kind of try on being like, if you're like, oh, I could be that guy or that guy or that guy or that guy. There's like a billion guys you can be, but there's like five non-guys. So anyways, that inspires me.
Wow. That is such an awesome answer. I love how taking something that could potentially be like really frustrating and disheartening to see, you turning that into like, no, it's like actually validating the work that you're doing and putting out in the world. And also like honoring your own integrity and your sense of like what you want to be doing as an artist. We talk about this a lot on this podcast that it's really hard to say no, you know, like we as artists, we're like, oh my gosh, yes, collaboration and work and money and wow, next steps in our career. So like to hear you have that kind of integrity to be like, oh, wow, this person is really talented, but not for me, is cool.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think we owe it to ourselves. And, like, the fact is that, like, I always like to think of my mom. She's 80. She's totally liberal. She's awesome. She's a nice lady. But, like, I remember, like, in high school, when I was in high school, a long, long, long time ago, way before gay marriage was legal, she was like, should gay people be able to get married? And I was like, Mom, they're people like us. Of course they should. And she was immediately like, oh, yeah, you're right. Of course. Done.
Yeah.
Done. That's what I like to think, that the people who are like sexist, or I know this is not true. I know that there's a bigger issue of sexism and racism and homophobia and horrible things out there. But what I like to think is I try to imagine that everyone is just like my mom and that they just need me to be like, no, we can't do that way. And that they're going to immediately be like, you're right, you can't, because it makes it easier to stand up to them. Does that make sense? Like if you're thinking like, oh my God, it's going to be this horrible battle and they're never going to understand, like it makes it much harder to like say something. But anyway, does that make sense? I don't know.
Yes. Yeah, it makes so much sense. It actually reminds me of this amazing book called The Person You Mean to Be by Dr. Dolly Chugg. Lauren, I haven't brought this book up in a while, or a book rack on the podcast in a while.
That's why I'm laughing. I'm like, oh, it's been a minute.
It's an amazing book. Everyone should read it. And basically, I'm going to say this like not as well as she says in the book, but basically what she talks about is how there's like a spectrum when it comes to people and their beliefs, right? So like there's going to be the people on one end of the spectrum who think like me and you and believe the things that we believe. Then there are going to be the people on that other end of the spectrum who are hateful, who think that gay people should not get married under any circumstances, who are racist, who are whatever terrible thing they are. Then there are the people in the middle, and those people are the 60%. And they're your mom back when you were in high school. Right. And that when you are trying to make a change and you're trying to convince people to think like you, you want to target that 60% because those are the people whose minds are open, who are more likely to hear your point of view, who are more likely to hear why gay people should get married, right. Versus like, you're never going to change the minds of those people on the other end of the spectrum who are like, no, that is a sin, you know? Yeah. So I think that's such a beautiful way to go through life, is assuming that everyone is in that 60%, because most people probably are, you know?
And that's what I think is like, for me as a female, quote unquote, female filmmaker, like, I hate that I have to say that I'm a female filmmaker, but like, that's something that I find, you know, anytime I've ever like worked with someone or collaborated or gotten funding from people, like I just really push the boundaries of who I cast and what the writing is. And I think that's like really important for us to do. And the thing is that like, if you just like, you know, do it nicely, like if you're just like, well, I don't know why it can't, this therapist can't be played by a non-binary person or a woman. Like, I don't understand. Like, if you just say it nicely, like, usually people are like, oh, yeah. You know, like, they – we're just so, you know, used to, like – I think people are so used to just seeing men, like, white guys doing everything. You know, I don't know where we stand on the whole – I haven't really followed up on the James Bond thing, but – I did hear that it's a possibility that there is going to be like a woman of color playing James Bond.
Yeah. And
I don't know if that will happen, but honestly, why not? Like, it makes no sense why that couldn't happen.
So
I think that like people just need that to be proposed to them most of the time. Like, the, you know, the 60%.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautifully said. Totally. So Shayna, so taking it back a little, we'd love to hear your story. What inspired you to become a director and a writer, both for film and then also the work that you're doing with the New York Times and with Scratch as well?
Well, I mean, I've been a writer my whole life. I have like over here like a billion journals to my right. But I always journaled as a little kid and like would write these stories all the time. And I was always writing stuff. And I thought I wanted to be a short story writer or like a fiction writer, but I tried that during college and after college. And it was fine. But then when I graduated from college, my friend and I started making public access TV together, and it was just the two of us, my friend Julie, and it was stoner comedy. It was like really goofy. It was kind of like an early, like a very early version of like Broad City. And we had it on BCAT, which is Brooklyn Cable Access Television, and also Manhattan Neighborhood Network. So we had it on two channels in New York City. And like people would recognize us all the time. And we did that for 7 years. We did tons and tons of comedy content, like, each episode was 28 minutes of edited content, super goofy, really lo-fi. We did every aspect of it, wrote it, shot it, acted in it, edited it. And doing that was like my identity for 7 years. And I really feel like I cut my teeth there. And I would never have thought of myself as a filmmaker or a director, but we were doing every aspect of it and really developing our own weird kind of senses of humor. And we often played men, which is something that we didn't talk about then, but we recently talked about, that we almost always dressed as men or wore like a beard, like fake beards, or drew on our faces, or like our names were Steve all the time. You know, like we kind of were like, we just thought it was like somehow very freeing to be men, that we could do anything if we weren't having to be like sexy and female. And so it was this really amazing experience. And when that ended after 7 years, I kind of was like lost and didn't know what to do. And I did stand up and I did radio and I performed with my mom live a bunch. And then I was like, you know what? I want to make movies. And so when I was 6 months pregnant with my first kid, I started making my first feature. And it was just me and my husband and our friend making it. And so if my husband was on camera, I was doing sound. And if I was on camera, he was doing sound. And we made this movie, and it was like a mixture of fiction and documentary. And then, and I just, loved it. And that movie got us a bunch of work. So we became a business together and we started making content for other people. And it kind of lit this fire inside of me. And I've made like hundreds of things. I'm just like a very busy maker. Like I make a lot of lo-fi things. I'm not very precious about it, but I also make bigger things that will go to like bigger festivals or more well-known festivals, things that look more glossy. But then I also will continue to make stuff just like shooting with my phone or with my camera that I have, or like with stock footage, you know, I just make all the time. So that's like how I became a filmmaker. And I don't know, is that, am I giving too much information?
This is perfect.
It's so funny. Whenever we ask this question, people are always the same way. They're like, am I talking too much? And we're like, no, we are riveted. This is like what we love about this podcast is hearing people's stories. So
yeah. I mean, also like I had made a lot of comedy videos with my, so after The Spew ended, which was my public access show, one of the things I did in that interim before I made my first feature was that me and my husband partner, Chris, and our two friends, Jeff and Roberti, the four of us made like, we set out to make 50 video or 52 videos in 1 year, like one a week. And we wound up making like 150 videos or something. Comedy videos. Some of them are really funny and good. And some of them are just terrible, but it was like really fun. We were constantly like learning how to improvise and shoot, and we just learned all this stuff. And that also really, like, they're hilarious and I love them to bits. And we still are in constant contact and are going to film something this spring or summer. But what I did notice is that people were constantly like, I can't tell who's the funniest of the three of you guys. And then they would be like, and Shayna, you're like so hardworking or whatever. I don't know. Like, it was like the compliments that we got were definitely different. Like they got like genius, brilliant, hilarious. And it was like, I was so good at following through or whatever. And it's like, I am differently funny than they are, but like, I'm so funny too. And it was like a thing that I remember like bothering me and made me, that also really inspired me to like want to direct the first movie when I was pregnant, the Baby Mooners, and continue to like go off and keep directing and make stuff that I directed and that definitely had like a female gaze. And I use them in everything I do. But it was definitely like that, like just seeing how people responded to me versus how they responded to them was like, oh, there needs to be more of me out there. Like, I don't mean me in front of the camera because I happen to not like that much, but like my voice and other women and not dudes writing and directing. So that like kind of set a fire under my butt to just create. And then in terms of the work I do with my friend Julia Rothman for the New York Times, and we've done stuff for Washington Post and the New Yorker, and also we've written a book and we're writing a second book. That stuff, like I had always been a writer and had done a lot of interviewing. And so when she and I met, we just really liked each other and we started doing these pieces together where I would write and she would illustrate. And then we started working on our book, Everybody. And then, the New York Times like asked us to apply, with other people were applying to, and it was supposed to be like a half page of an illustrated column. And we were supposed to hand in a half a page illustrated column by Friday to like be considered for this job. But we handed in two full pages by Tuesday. And I think that helped us get the job. Like they saw that we were like, could, you know, produce and also produce quickly. And like the two stories that we pitched both ran and were different. Like they looked different and they were different stories. And so that's how we got the Times column. And we've been doing that for 2.5 years. Wow. So that's that. And then we now are working on our second book that came out of the column. So yeah.
That is all so amazing. It's cool that, you know, everybody's story is different. And like Lauren said, that's what we love about this podcast, but yours really is unique.
Something that stood out to me too about the story, it's something you kind of hear a little bit about, but like all the kind of just like throwing stuff at the wall at first and just like trying to make stuff. I think there's a lot of pressure. I don't know if you're a director or a filmmaker or an actor, like whatever you're doing has to be like good. It has to be good quality if you're going to show it to people, to have it considered seriously. But I love this idea of just like really like what you were describing with like the public access show and like your film, even now, like sometimes you're like, I just shoot on my iPhone, but sometimes or lo-fi stuff. And then other times it's like more like higher production value. But that kind of just like throwing stuff at the wall and just doing it is so important. And we just don't talk about that.
I think like so a lot of the times people come to me like younger people they don't have to be younger, I guess, but they're like a younger place in their careers. And they're like, I have this like 30-page short film that I want to make and I've never made anything. Like, what do you suggest? And I'm like, well, don't make that right now. Or like make that, but shoot it on two iPhones or something. I don't know. Like, I kind of just figure out how to make a thing and then you can make that. Like, I'm not saying don't ever make that, but people want like 50 grand to make a short film. And it's like one of the best things I've ever made was my husband and I were in our office and he wanted to smoke a cigarette. He's sober. He's given up so much. Alive, but he still struggles with quitting smoking and he wanted to go smoke a cigarette and I was like, I'll let you smoke a cigarette if I can interview you about why you want to smoke a cigarette and then I'm going to film you smoking the cigarette. And we did it and then we put it together and made it like a 2 or 3 minute video, like film, and I love it. And it's like, I didn't like send it to festivals because it's like a 3 minute film that I made for $0, but I think it's so good. Like, it's funny and it's moving and it's interesting. And it's like, you just see this person smoking a cigarette. And we played with the colors. So it looks kind of 70s and that's it. And like, from making that, I like learned, like a thing that I then wound up applying to this short film that I made with my mom last May. And I invested in that. Like, I spent more money than I normally do. And my friend John Nelson shot it, who shoots like Netflix stuff. And it's beautiful. And it just opened Aspen Film Festival and it's going to Hot Docs. And it's, cool. You know, gotten some other things that I'm not allowed to say yet. But like, it's beautiful. But I used some of the same, like, it looks much more glossy. And it's a much more like full, it's a 10 minute film. It's like, it's a bigger thing, but it was like inspired by or like I learned from making that 3 minute one how to do this other one. So I'm always telling people who are like, how do I make my thing? I'm like, just make anything. Like, just literally like find a way to make a film in your house right now. I don't know. So that's what I'm always telling people. And I think people are so precious. Like, we don't have to be that precious about stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think something beautiful that I'm hearing in at least the film that you made with your husband is just being able to find art anywhere and make art out of anything. That's really cool. You know, you took something that is just an everyday occurrence, or maybe not anymore. And you made that into a short film. And then you use those principles to create a longer film that's really going places. That's really amazing.
Yeah. But like, that's the thing is that we all have these moments like all the time. And like my oldest kid, when he was 4, my husband was away on a gig, like acting. He's an actor, and he was acting in this thing upstate. and my mom slept over, and so it was like me, my mom, and my four-year-old, and we were all in bed, and we had a flashlight, and my kid was like, the moon goes up with the flashlight, and then he was like, and the moon goes down, and he just like moved the flashlight down, and so I filmed that. And I just remember, like, at the time being like, this is a four-year-old, and basically, like, that's a film. Like, there's an arc. The moon goes up. The moon goes down. You know, it's not, like, rocket science. It's not, like, I don't know, Terrence Malick or anything. But it's, you know, it was really beautiful. And I think those moments are around us all the time. And I think the problem that people often have is that they're like looking for some giant story. And I think that's like exacerbated by some of the Hollywood stuff, is that like, it's not enough unless there's like a dinosaur that kills people or something. It's true. And like some of the funnest things to watch are just like slice of life things. And I can't decide if maybe part of the reason I feel that is because I'm a woman. I don't know. But I just think that it's true that it's like, that, you know, like the film I made about my mom is like very moving, but it's also super funny. It's the relationship between us. And I just think there's like so much comedy and drama just in our lives all the time without there being like animatronic dinosaurs or guns or whatever it is, or like crazy, crazy love stories. Like, you know, I just have like a nice everyday moment with a person, and that's like a nice love story.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm curious. So the film that you made with your mom, you said that when you kind of put like more like resources in and kind of made like a higher budget thing. Like, so what, I'm just curious, because yeah, just Alyssa and I talk about this a lot, like off the podcast. So like when you're kind of deciding to make something that's higher budget, like what are the considerations that go into that? Like, how do you kind of choose who you're going to work with and like the producing of it and all of that?
Well, here's the thing. I made three feature films. So in addition to like hundreds of like comedy videos and short films and just like tons of stuff I've made and like comedy series, like digital series, I also have made three feature films that I made each for $15,000. I mean, they're very, very experimental. All of them got distribution. They all went to festivals. They're what you would call like an anchovy movie. Like some people love them and a lot of people are like not into them. But I like learned so much and feel like so proud of so many moments in those movies. But I kept like watching, I would see people's films. Like I would see that, like I would make a thing and I would just make it, like Chris and I would make it. And it was like lo-fi and I thought that was like cool. I have like a very DIY like punk aesthetic. And so like, I was like, that's cool. I love the way that looks. But then I would like see another person's film that looked like glossy, and it wasn't like better than my film, but it was like you could see the money, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, that film is going really far, you know? And maybe this is dumb that I didn't put it together earlier, but I like, it took me many years of being like, F that, I'm just not into that. Like, I'm into like my aesthetic. But then after seeing it happen so often, I was like, well, what if I just try? Like, I know how to make it look nice. What if I just tried? So when my mom told me this story about that starts with the night before her first marriage, I was like, this is a crazy story. And it has to do with her making eggplant sauce. And I had become obsessed with cooking shows during the pandemic. And I was like, what if I like make this look nice? Like, what if I like don't just shoot it with my totally fine camera, like totally fine, not great. Like, what if I shoot it with like a nice camera, really nice lenses, and like have my friend John, who's like super talented, like what if John does it? And like we like can really like see the eggplant and the sauce and my mom's beautiful like Upper West Side rent controlled apartment, you know, like what if we like really just put a little bit of money into it? Like what could happen, you know? And it's proven that theory that probably everyone else got to before me, right? Which is that like, if you can see a little bit of the money on the screen, people are more into it. So for that one, I decided to do it. I'm shooting another, definitely one more film like that this early summer, like late spring, that John will also shoot, and it'll be nice cameras and nice equipment, and we'll get it professionally colored. Like that will be nicer looking. But in the meantime, I will still continue to make like just things that are lo-fi because I like to tell those stories too. But I think like I'm finishing up this doc called Dead Pets, which Chris and I just shot all ourselves, and it was about our dog dying. And we interviewed all these people about their animals dying. And like that will probably not go very far because it's very lo-fi, and I'm okay with that. Like it's a story I wanted to tell. I hope that it makes some people laugh or move some people, but I'm kind of okay with just like that project being what it is. Whereas like this other project I'm going to do this summer, I think it has like legs, like the story maybe has like more legs. So I'm going to make it glossier looking. So that's kind of how I decide like, oh, can this story like speak to more people? Do you need it to look nice or fancier for it to be palatable? Okay, then let's spend a little money. But dead pets, like if someone is really into their dead pet or really worried about their pet dying, like they might just watch my film anyway. So I don't need to invest as much in that. I mean, I've invested a ton of time into it. It's been like 2 years in the making, but it looks like Cassavetes style, very grainy.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so much to comment on. First, like eggplant sauce. Like while you were describing that, I love eggplant.
Just
one of my favorite vegetables. So I'm just like mouth is watering.
I love it so much.
Oh,
not everyone does.
It definitely. It's like anchovy. It's like a hit or miss. But also while you were talking, I realized so some of the films that you do are documentary, and then some are narrative style. And like, so now it's kind of also making sense to me, like why some things are maybe like more suited to lo-fi, some things more suited to like bigger financial investment. So that's just interesting. And also interesting, you know, I feel like it's easy to burn out when you're doing that much amount of work at a high budget, right? And high production value and bringing in so many people. So it actually like, this is really enlightening and cool to hear. Like you can make all that work, but kind of balancing between like lo-fi and is hi-fi the right way to say it?
Sure, yeah.
Hi-fi, I mean, yeah.
That's what I say, but
yeah, like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of good balance. I was talking with some filmmaker friends yesterday who were saying that, like how they feel so exhausted after like every 2 years after they produce something, they have to take a break because they're so tired and burn out from doing it all, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that I'm like really drawn to both kinds. Like I'm totally drawn to like making a thing and refining it and making it really good and palatable for people. But I'm also like intrigued by the idea of shooting a movie in a day, like a feature. Like I love that idea. Like I like the idea of like running around New York with my camera and a tripod and just like shooting scenes and then having someone just narrate over it. Like I'm just super into like I like all the aspects of creativity and storytelling, and so you know, doing something like the eggplant sauce or something that takes more money and more people is like holding this like giant goblet for a lot longer. Like you're like holding this thing and someone's like filling it up for a really long time. Like you have to like really hold it. But like to make something that's just like takes two people or one person to make is like a shot glass. Like it's easier, it goes down easier. Like, but to me, I mean, I'm not a drinker, so I don't, neither of the does, but the point is just that like, I'm a, both of those things are appealing to me. Like, and I find as a creative person, I need to have like a bunch of things like on my stove. Like, I need to have like a bigger pot that's like a TV show that I'm developing, but I also need to have like a film that I know I'm making that's gonna get done. And then I also like to have like another, you know what I mean? Like, I just like to have my hands in a lot of, I feel like I have a billion mixed metaphors right now. But anyway, I like to have a lot of things going. And like, I just was having lunch today with my friend Starley Kine, who's like, she did the mystery show podcast and she worked for This American Life for a really long time. Now she's a TV writer. She's incredible. And we were talking and I was like, you know, this is crazy, but I just want to do another zine. Like, I did zines in my 20s, and it's like, most people would be like, oh, my zine days are done. But it's like, I'm still into that kind of thing. Like, just making stuff. And I don't know, something is inside of me that's just like, I just have that desire to constantly make things. And it doesn't have to always be a wide audience that devours them. I mean, it's really nice when there's people who see or read or watch your stuff. Like, that's amazing. But it's also just fun to make something and have like one person be like, that spoke to me.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. And all just very relatable also. I think sometimes people hold back on creating things because they're concerned that nobody's going to watch it or get it or whatever it is. I'm thinking about a person that probably about a year ago reached out to me and said that they were looking to create a podcast and asking me for advice because we have this podcast. And they said that they weren't sure that they could do it because they didn't know who would listen. And I said, when we started our podcast, like, we are not famous person, like, neither of us. And we just started it. And because we were doing it, as we continued, people started listening. And now we've been doing it for a couple of years, and now a lot of people are listening. And I just thought, like, I think you're like my, this is going to be sound weird, so sorry, but you're like my spirit animal. Like, I'm such a creative person. Like, I self-published my children's book, and same thing. I wasn't like, I could have been like, I don't know if I want to do this because I don't know if anyone's going to buy it because I'm not famous, or, and I don't have a publisher, or I could have done what I did, which is I was like, I think it's really good. I really believe in it. I'm super passionate about it. So I'm just going to get it out in the world. And because I did it, people bought it. You know, and I think that it's actually really rare. It is so hard as a creative person to spend your time and your resources, whether that is money or not, and put it into things when you have no idea how it's going to hit. So it's really inspiring to hear you just be like, yeah, like, sometimes I'm doing things and I have no idea who's going to watch, or, but if it reaches one person, then that is worth it. Mm-hmm. I think that really resonates with me, and I hope it resonates with some of our listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've started also this, I've made so much stuff, and like the features, for example, are like big deals to make, right? Like, it takes a lot of time, and energy and resources, even if it doesn't cost a lot of money. And it's like, you kind of start to see your stuff as like children, where it's like, I'm just happy that they're out of the house. Like, like, more people have watched and liked my third movie. Yes, absolutely. Or my second one. Sure. But like, I don't know. In the end, it's just like, it's my kid, and my kid is like out there living their life, and it's cool. Like, I'm happy that I like helped give life to this thing, and that it exists, and the people that it speaks to, and that's great. And I think it's like, you know, I don't know, it's just, to me, I like to see it as like this sort of like oeuvre or whatever, like you know, like, you have this like body of work as a person, as a human. And to me, it's just more interesting to have made all of these different things, And like, if someone ever was to become a fan of mine, they would have like a billion things, like rabbit holes that they could go down to find. And like, maybe for some of the people, it's like only the mainstream stuff that will appeal to them. But some other people will find like this series that my friend and I did called Nuns on the Run, which was like about two nuns that find out they're Jewish. And, you know, each episode is a minute long and it's really dumb. And, you know, like, I don't know, I went to a film festival with some other film and someone was like, I love that. I saw that, by the way, and I loved it. And I was like, oh my God, that's crazy. You're like one of 12 people that saw that thing. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's like, the thing is that all of this is temporary. Like, every single thing is temporary. Like super temporary. Like, even in 500 years, like, our most famous filmmakers and maybe five, I don't know, maybe 1,000 years. In 1,000 years, like, the most famous filmmakers and writers and dancers and musicians of today are probably going to not be remembered. So, like, what does it matter? It's just about creating and having your feelings and being like, here are my feelings. Like, this, I want to share my feelings about this. And sometimes you share it well and people respond to it. And sometimes you don't, and it's fine.
Oh my goodness. I love all of that. I think something that you touched on that's really important is the acknowledgement that your work is not for everybody.
Well, yeah. No.
It is just not going to be. And as artists, it is so hard because I think so many of us are just such people pleasers and we want everybody to love us and what we are doing and what we are creating. And it's just, whether you're an actor like, and somebody's just not like seeing what you do as what they need or want, or whether you're a writer and your work is just not landing for some producer, but it is for others. Like, that is just part of the artistic journey. And we have to all be okay with it. And you're so okay with it. And that's why you're able to continue to create and make things that matter to you.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, like, you're going to just, as an artist, you're going to have things that like I have things that like hit above the radar and things that don't ever, mm-hmm. and that's okay. Like, but I just think that as an artist, it's like my real goal is to like answer the call of being an artist and like, and create stuff. And that means like trying things and things not being perfect. And like some of the stuff, like my third movie, Blunderpuss, the last 20 minutes,
I know. Wow.
The last 20 minutes are so good. And it's like the rest of it, like there's good moments and there's not so good moments, but like, I'm really, really proud of like the last 15 to 20 minutes. And like, when I do make another movie, like, I think I will have learned from those last 20 minutes. But like, if I hadn't allowed myself to make something imperfect, I would never have made those moments, you know? And I think it's like, just really, like, I'm not here to like serve everyone or to make perfect things. And also, like, so often, so much of the stuff that is like the most popular is like, it's just like, that doesn't even appeal to me. And that's okay. Like, I really don't understand so many of the movies that are like a lot, these like superhero movies, like they don't speak to me, and that's totally fine. I'm glad they speak to other people. But like, just because I'm not making that doesn't mean that like what I'm making isn't valid. And I think just like as humans, we're just creative. Like, we're creative. I mean, maybe all animals are, but like, we are a creative animal and we have these feelings. And, you know, I think it's like really important. I don't know. I grew up, my dad was a therapist and my sister is a therapist and my brother-in-law is a therapist. And like, I totally grew up as a person who like wanted to take all these feelings and make them into things. And so that's why I make stuff. And I think that, you know, everyone, I just feel sad that anyone would be like, oh, my thing isn't good enough. You know, yeah. I mean, I also think like, I think about my husband who every single day, I'm so lucky, is like, he's like, what a beautiful face. Or he'll be like every day he like hits on me in our house. Like, he loves the way I look, you know? And it's like, I might not be, or like the way I sound or whatever. He thinks I'm funny. He thinks I'm smart. Like, he just loves me. And it's like, I'm not for everyone. Like, I'm going to meet a bunch of people, like men, women, all kinds of people who I would never have like a romantic relationship with. And that's okay. But it's like, there is this person who like I like him and he likes me. And it's like, that's kind of how it is with all the stuff that you make as, as an artist, is like, there are just going to be people out there who are like, I love this. Like, I'm super comedy, you know? And then there's other people who are like, this isn't broad enough for me, or this isn't classic beauty enough for me, or whatever it is, you know, and that's okay.
Yeah. I love all of this so much. It just a reminder that like, yeah, this business is so subjective, and as hard as it, I mean, it sounds like for you, what's so admirable is like the sense of confidence in the work that you do, and like just the pride in the work that you do. And I think that's like a really hard thing for a lot of artists, to have that sense of confidence and pride in a business that is so full of rejections constantly.
The rejections are always hard, but like, they don't last for very long.
True.
Like, you get a rejection and you're like, okay, on to the, like,
yeah.
Okay, yeah. I mean, and you also, there is no rhyme or reason. Like, during the pandemic, so my husband's an actor, and during the pandemic, a lot of like, well, there's still a pandemic, but during like the really quarantine-y part, there was like, he would get all these commercial auditions where it would be like, they would ask him to audition with our son, or ask me and him to audition. And I hate being on camera. I will do it for myself because I know how to use me, but I don't really want to do it for anyone else. But I would do it because it's like, it's his job, and I would be like, fine. And then I would like immediately feel this like, oh, like they didn't choose us because I'm like too Jewish looking or something like that. Like, it would just be like this like internalized anti-Semitism or whatever, like internalized sexism. And then I would see the commercial we had auditioned for, and they would be using a person that looked nothing like us. Like, they would be using a person who, it wasn't like they were less Jewish looking. It was just that they were maybe more Jewish looking, or they were like both redheads, or they were both, you know, really, really short, or really, really tall, or whatever it was. Like, they both looked like, you know, carrots, and we looked like potatoes, or whatever it is. It wasn't at all like a rejection of us. It was just that it was a different direction, you know?
Yeah.
And realizing that was like, oh my God, that's everything.
Yeah. Like,
you know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, you might not get into this film festival and you're like, oh my God, what's wrong with my film? But it's like, they're looking for peas and you're a carrot or whatever. Like, you just have to realize that, like, it's just not personal. Like, it's, yeah. And yeah, if you think it is, you will never make anything. You will, yeah, never do anything. You know, I mean, you just, that's the sad fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are words like, oh man, this should be like in a frame or something, like something, or like on the written on a post-it that you like see every day, because this is so important. Yes. Also, the analogies are just like so on point. All these food, like potatoes and carrots and peas, yeah, and I'm yeah, making me very hungry right now. That's
it
all.
Does.
Yeah.
Well, before we wrap, I do want to ask you about your book, because we didn't really talk about it. Love Everybody, right?
Oh, that one is just called Everybody.
Everybody, sorry. I added the love. So can you tell us what your book is about, the process of having it published, and if you're able to, about your next book that's coming out?
Yeah, so we did this book called Everybody, and it was basically, it was Julia's idea originally. Like, she had been really, really into our bodies ourselves as like a kid or like a teenager. And so she wanted to do like a new version of that. And so she had this idea to like collect all these stories from people and get all these, she's an illustrator, so she wanted to get a lot of art about bodies and sex. And then when I started working with her on it, I was like, We looked through the stories that we had gotten, because we had this website where people could write in stories, and they were all people like us. They like were like white women of a certain age, And so I was like, we need to like go to the streets to get stories. And so then we kind of we started going to the streets, and we started going out with my like film gear, my recording equipment, and talking to people and getting these stories from people. And then we flew to New Orleans and we got stories there. And we went out a ton, got all these stories. And then we like little by little kind of figured out which stories could be in the book. And so the book is basically a compilation of a bunch of first person essays by people. And then also some interviews with that are like longer that I did and then would write up and edit. And then these shorter stories that we would get from people about sex and bodies. And there's all these different chapters and themes. And so that was that book. And that, we had sold it. We had sold it and then worked on it for about a year and a half. And then that came out last January. And then, in March 2020, when we had already been doing the column for like 6 months, that was like right when everything was shutting down in New York. I had talked to my mom and I was like, my kid's home from school and I'm like having to work and I just feel really overwhelmed and underwater. And she was like, well, when I had cancer, I was doing chemo, like I couldn't get that much done. So I would make this like short list of things that I could do every single day. And I would know that I could get that done and it would like buoy my spirit. Like it would make me feel better. But it didn't like totally tire me out. So you should do that. Like you should have like a to-do list every day of something that you know you can get done with your kid, with your 4-year-old and your work. But, you know, it's not crazy. And so I told Julia that and she was like, that's a great idea for a column. Like, why don't we talk to people about how they got through things, you know, at the start of the pandemic. So we did it for the Times for our column. We talked to 5 different people about things that they got through. And they were very different things like divorce, homelessness, war, wow, the Muslim ban, losing a family member during 9/11. And that column did really well and people really responded to it. So after our book came out last January, we were kind of like, what should we do next? And I'm an advice junkie. I love advice. And so we were like, oh, well, that column did well. What if we did that but blew it up, like, you know, or not blew it up, but like blew it out. Like, dude, you know, interview like a ton of people and all kinds of stories. Mm-hmm. And so we sold that last May and we've been working on it since like August. And yeah, we've just been interviewing all these people and then she paints their portraits. And when we interview them, I like write it all up and kind of edit and condense the story. And, you know, it's cool. And some of the advice is like super obvious. Some of the stories don't really have advice, but like the person got through, and some of them it's less obvious how they got through, but you know, it's cool. Like all the stories, they run the gamut and they like every single one I think so far is like very fun to read. And the illustrations are amazing that she's been doing. Wow. So yeah, so that's that book.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Wow. Do you have a title for this book yet, or?
Well, the title of the column was How We Got By. And so that's what we're calling it right now. But I don't know. Eventually, like, I have no idea what will happen. Like, everybody used to be, like, sex with everybody. And then it changed, you know. So by the time we're done, I have no idea. Maybe they'll just buy. No, just kidding. I don't know what it'll eventually be, but right now it's How We Got By.
Cool.
Very cool. Yeah, it's interesting. We were talking earlier about this idea of like making art, you know, and like in 1,000 years from now, like will people know or care or remember? But something like this, I think, is really amazing because like you are documenting such like a crazy period of time and history. That is the kind of thing that could, I don't know, I work at a museum in my other life. So like my history nerd brain is like on overdrive right now, just thinking about like, whoa, what if 150 something years from now or 1,000 years from now, somebody reads that book and is like learns about the past? That's just.
Well, crazy. I mean, I will say it's not pandemic specific. It was
okay.
The pandemic, but all the stories are from like all different times.
I see. Okay.
The pandemic. But it does, like, my sister's friend is an archaeologist or an anthropologist. And she recently wrote me a letter and was like, you're doing anthropology. And like, that's how I feel, like, with our column and the books. It does feel like that's what we're doing because we're, like, out on the streets or talking to people on Zoom who are all over the world. Yeah. And, like, you know, like, we talked to this one guy, Tintelli, who's in Madagascar and was like, no one in America has ever asked me anything. You know, and so it was like this amazing experience to like talk to this guy who's like a DJ in Madagascar and was like, thank you for asking me this like question. I've never like literally no one has ever asked me like from the United States anything. So that was like a really cool experience. And like that's how even like people who are like in Brooklyn, you know, depending on who they are like no one has been interested in my story. Thank you. You know? And so, it does feel in some ways like we're doing this kind of like weird anthropological work of like getting stories and documenting stories. I guess it's like oral history.
Yeah.
Yes. That is so beautiful. Everyone just wants to feel seen and heard, and you are allowing them to do that. That's really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, Shayna, this has been such a pleasure. It's been so cool to hear your story, your perspectives on the industry, all this, like, so impressive, all the stuff that you're doing and creating, constantly making. Thank you for sharing it all with us.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for asking me to be on it. And I wish you the best of luck with everything.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yes, it has been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening. We always love hearing from you. You can email us at positivecreativitypodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Instagram at positivecreativitypodcast. And for more info on our guest today, please view the show notes. Join us next time on Positive Creativity Podcast.